Hello, everybody. Welcome to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously, but who did really eat it today on Connections and Wordle.
Man,
that's a twofer.
It's been a tough couple days. It really has. I don't know if you've been keeping track of our like daily updates. I've not even done the Connections puzzle since like Thursday of last week because I don't know. It keeps puzzling me, and I don't have the I don't really have the vigor for it in the morning.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. You should have skipped it today too.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to do. That one's tough to do in the morning. I will say. But condolences. Condolences on going over two this morning.
Many failures.
What should we talk about today?
It is kind of strange, though, because like I've had three pretty relaxing days, like sleeping nine and a half hours at night.
The fuck?
You know, being able to sleep in the morning, kids not waking up too early, have a nice, peaceful, you know, cup of coffee in the morning with Amy on the couch. Just very, like, my brain has finally gotten a chance to relax. And you know what the first side effect that appears to be?
Is that intelligence?
I can no longer do any of those word puzzles. Like, they apparently thrive on some, like, over-anxious part of my brain that has been turned off this weekend.
You gotta get yourself keyed up.
It will be back on early tomorrow morning, I assure you.
Great.
5 a.m. Good.
Oh, gosh. All right. I have a few announcements.
Several. Okay. Let me get a beer. Because these are, this is gonna be boring.
Yeah. I'll just go.
All right, hit me.
All right. What do you got? What do you got today?
Schlafly American Cream Ale.
Oh, a real brewery.
Schlafly Summer Sampler. Summer Sampler.
Schlafly at Aldi these days. How exciting. Yeah, I love a good cream ale. That's great. Announcement number one. This is a big one. Maple is no longer afraid of cicadas.
Oh, well, I'm excited for her.
It took her like 3 days and she's suddenly very acclimated to cicadas. Mm-hmm. This immersion therapy of walking outside has been really good. Last week we talked about how she was very scared of them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now she will just go and pick them up and then carry them over to me and say, look at this cicada. And I will say, get that away from me. so she had a full turnaround.
Wow. That's why. Yeah. June has not gotten to that point yet. I might need to have Maple give June a call, maybe chat for a little bit, maybe give her WhatsApp or something like that.
Cause they'll exchange phone numbers.
Yeah. Cause June very much. No, she walks outside, not exaggerating, from the house to the truck. Hands over her head the entire way. The entire way.
Now, I do sympathize with that a little bit because today I was walking out of my garage and I did get dive bombed by a cicada that got stuck in my hair.
Oh.
And that was like real gross and very harrowing, like 10 seconds of my life.
Imagine how the cicada felt. It's like, just like covered in pomade.
Well, it's made some bad decisions.
Uh-huh. I feel dapper, but I think I might die in here.
And I started having sex with my head, which was real weird. But yeah, Aaron caught her the other day. I guess like, you know, when they go through their whatever, their life cycle, they will, they'll burst out of their little exoskeletons and leave those clinging grossly to trees and stuff.
Right.
Maple will now pick those up and just start like pulling apart the legs and be like, this is a leg. Boop. This is a leg. Boop. This is a leg. Boop. And I'm just like, Maple, this is upsetting behavior, frankly.
Yeah. No, it's remember the cooties game when we were growing up?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It was like the cooties game.
It's just the cooties game over again. And then you pull their little antennas off, and then you pull their eyeballs out. It's all very normal.
That was a pretty fucked up game, huh?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure when they found that game in Jeffrey Dahmer's house, they had to stop selling it for a few years until they did some rebranding. But it's probably fine.
I think so. Yeah, they all say video games are the problem. I don't think so.
Pretty it's sure it's the cootie game.
So that's what I see. Number two, if you follow us on social media, you've seen this already, but one of our listeners, Sally McGregor, has taken number one fan slot above everyone else who's ever listened to this podcast.
Sorry, guys.
She got a tattoo of our logo, and it's right there. It's pretty big.
Like where people can see it.
She didn't get on her forearm. Yeah. So thank you, Sally, for being our first official walking billboard.
Unbelievable.
Really great. And I didn't even ask her to do it.
No.
And I certainly did not pay her to do it.
We do not have that kind of money. Not even close.
Absolutely not.
So, well, I guess
it looks great.
Yeah, it really does. So the gauntlet has been dropped, my friend. So God,
where do you go from here? What's next?
I think
it's bigger than that.
I think you and I have to follow suit. I think
where would you get one? Where would it go?
Where are you getting a pen at? What are you doing?
I'm gonna do it right now.
What you do exactly? Yeah. So I have this sketch of your body here, and let me update it. Actually, let me see where you would want it.
It's like a doctor's office. I'm gonna put a little X through the part of you that you think you're gonna want this to hurt.
I don't know. It's a good question. Probably the buttocks, just because I got a lot of real estate back there.
Sure.
It's not doing anything. Like,
gigantic on the back.
Like shoulder
blades,
like a Steve-O tattoo, like a
yes,
like,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm not gonna no. No.
Okay. You're a butt guy.
Yeah. It's been established. So I'm gonna say buttocks first choice. If they can't do that because they're prude or something, maybe I'll get it like on a leg. Leg.
Okay. Yeah, I know. I know legs.
Yeah,
I've seen them.
Let me update the sketch. Yeah,
pretty familiar. Yeah.
What about you?
Let me draw a leg here for you. Wasn't sure if you had those. Gosh, where would I get it? I don't know. Maybe kind of fun to do it like in the finger on the side there, so he's like he could pop out.
Oh, and like a mustache on a different finger. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. And then you could do the mustache on the ghost if you do it just right.
Yeah.
And then on you.
Mm-hmm.
Be really great.
So hands
one.
Yeah,
hands. I think hands.
You're a teacher. Yeah, I mean you can get hand tattoos. I don't think it's a big deal.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I don't know, at Columbia, being an art school, the more tattoos you have as a teacher, the better.
Yeah.
I don't know what the attitude's going to be about that sort of thing in Mary Baldwin.
I think it was actually part of the tenure track at Columbia, if I recall correctly.
I think it was. Yeah. Like you doing any research? No, but I did get a new tattoo. Yeah. All right, check that off the list.
So your master's plus 30 plus tattoo. Oh, that's very good. That's excellent.
Start top tier, my friend. Very good. Very good. Yeah, I think fingers would be fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it.
All right.
Finger.
Well, next time we record.
We're doing it live from Tattoo Parlor. It'd
be really difficult for me to drag the laptop in there and all the equipment, obviously.
Sure.
And be like, I know.
You're not going to mind.
I know I'm only paying $75 to get this postage stamp sized ghost tattoo on my butt, but I really need about an hour to set up my AV work.
And then we're going to need you to do it for an hour.
Yeah.
It doesn't take that long because you have to hit a mark on these episodes.
Yeah. Also, I'm going to be giggling through a lot of it, so it's going to take a while.
So you're going to have to really hold it still. You got to really dig into that ass. That's a great idea. So wonder where Ryan will get his ghost tattoo.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because he also
he's in on this. He's part of this.
He
thing.
Also profits from this show. So he does. So it's a price he pays, I'm afraid.
When all three of us pay for very small tattoos, we'll be out of money again.
I love it.
What else? Oh, and then I learned a fun fact. Not related to ghost stories, but last week we talked about poltergeists. We mentioned briefly the movie Poltergeist. And then I just so happened to learn via a different podcast, the Atlas Obscura podcast this week. I listened to an episode about Steven Spielberg and how the idea for E.T. came about. And basically, so he did Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Mm-hmm. And then the studio was like, we want you to do another movie, like sequel to this one. And he was like, I don't really know if you should do a sequel. But then like one of his other movies had gotten a sequel that was just really bad because he hadn't been involved. He's like, I guess they're going to do it. So I should be the one to write it. And he wrote a script. I don't remember the name of the script, but it was a true sequel to Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It never got made. But when he was filming Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Harrison Ford's girlfriend at the time, whose name I do not recall, read the script. She's like, can I read it? And she's like, yeah. And read the script and was like, this is pretty good. There's a part in here about, like, it was about aliens that come down and they terrorize this family. But one of the aliens is like a nice alien. Mm-hmm. He's friends with the kids. And at the end, they leave the nice alien behind. She's like, this is the nice alien is a good thing. Like you should rewrite this. And that's the story. And that's how E.T. was formed.
Wow.
But then he took the other half of the script about the aliens coming down and terrifying everyone. Mm-hmm. And that became Poltergeist.
Okay. So,
yeah. And his whole thing was like he wanted to do two movies about like the prototypical American family being visited by, you know, otherworldly things. Mm-hmm. And one of them was a very nice alien, and one of them was poltergeists.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
So he went happy and he went dark. Hmm.
So as a child, I can't think of a movie that scared me more deeply than E.T. So I don't really know if I believe in that. I think he may have hit that one right on the bullseye.
It was pretty scary. I wonder if it's still scary.
I mean, like, it's a little poop-shaped alien that comes down and, like, you find it in your room.
How is that? It's like all chalky white. It's upsetting.
Oh my god. And then the little boy is dying in it, and as a little boy that movie is too much. I can't do it again.
A lot. Plus it's got Drew Barrymore in it.
Ugh. Yeah, exactly.
it's tough watch. anyway, those are my announcements for this week. Do you have anything that you want to announce?
Nothing that interesting. The cicadas have gotten much worse down here. I did not realize there was any more room left in the dial on the cicadas, but oh boy.
we're deep in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I kept getting alerts on my watch about, you're experiencing dangerous noise levels. You should only experience this for a few hours a day. And I was like, I am on a bench. I'm on a bench under a tree.
So RIP your hearing.
Yeah.
Had a good run. Mm-hmm. Now it's done. Yeah, they're not joking around, these cicadas. I think this, I read up, they're supposed to go away at the end of June.
That's too bad.
That's when they start going away. So it's a birthday present for you.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to miss them.
Are you?
I really will. I will. It is very odd. Just like reaching into a bush and just pulling out several extremely dumb insects that just like don't know what to do about you. They kind of chatter and then they just sort of like crawl up your arm. Like, okay, I guess.
I, for some reason, chose this week to get back into running. Which is a terrible decision. It's just such a crunchy run. Mm-hmm. Every step is a crunch. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they get mad about it. Yeah. Sometimes they fly at your face. All right. Well, should we just do the thing?
Let's do some ghost.
Let's do the ghost. Let's tell you a ghost story. All right. Let's see. Here we are. Let me zoom in here. All right.
Dong!
In 1973, a crew of workers in Campbelltown, Australia, they were rebuilding an old bridge across a creek that was named after a man whose name was Fred Fisher.
Okay.
During construction, they dug up and sold railing from the very first version of the bridge. The bridge had been rebuilt before, mm-hmm. so this initial one was very, very old. And they thought, that's a fun piece of history. It's cool.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
The first bridge. Mm-hmm.
It's also probably worth something. Scrap.
Sure.
Melt it down.
So they used that piece of wood as the finishing post at the 1973 Campbelltown picnic races.
Oh.
This is a horse race.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
Yes.
But they used a a steel...
No.
Rail.
This is a wooden railing.
Oh, I'm sorry. They use a wooden rail
as the finishing post.
As the finishing post. Okay. That's not like the finishing line, right? Like the horse.
I'll be honest with you. I have no idea what a finishing post is.
So imagining all these horses running like full steam into what they're expecting is like one of those like ticker tape lines they just have to run through. And instead it's like a forged thick post.
Lost a lot of good horses that day.
Well, the first one that got cut in half, I guess, is the winner. Well, it's hard to get the wreath on him now.
Well, it's hard to get the stay anyway.
We'll go on him, but boy, you just have to keep putting it back.
Okay, so yeah, I don't know what finishing post is. I should look that up. And this is a good time for you to say. I don't want to brag, but I did my own research this week.
Oh, look at you.
So
I could kind of tell. All right.
It's like the first time in like 3 weeks. Okay, so anyway, so when the head of the races, a woman named Deirdre O'Dowd, announces the idea to the public, one of the locals is like, Fisher's ghost is not going to like that.
Oh, okay.
Now, Deirdre didn't believe in ghosts, so she ignored this warning mm-hmm. at her own peril.
Oh.
Day of the race, the weather was terrible. Mm-hmm. Here's a quote from Deirdre. Quote, the rain was so heavy, the horses swam up the track, so we had to cancel.
Okay.
I'm guessing that's hyperbole. So they reschedule for a few weeks later, but that date gets washed out too.
Raining 2 days in the same month. I don't know, guys.
Wait a minute. You're not going to believe this. They schedule it a third time. Mm-hmm. That gets rained out too. So does the fourth and the fifth and the sixth.
I mean, at some point you start putting money on it, on the getting rained out, and you start collecting.
I'm sure they did. This goes on for 2 years. Every time they schedule this race, it gets rained out.
I mean, it's not, I mean, wait, and what was the race celebrating exactly?
Campbelltown picnic.
Right. Races. So for two.
Celebrate Campbelltown.
So for 2 years, every 3 weeks, they're like, okay, now we're going to do.
Yes. Now we're finally going to honor our town. Finally.
And honored for 2 years. Every person's like, I have made deviled eggs every three fucking weeks for the last 2 years.
I am out of paprika.
I am just, I'm done. I'm not doing it anymore.
So by the end of 1974, the next year, the secretary of the race club, a man named Bob McWilliam, he's had enough. Mm. So he goes out and he digs up the old post from the racetrack and he put on his big ceremony where he handed it back to Deirdre and very publicly asks her to remove it from the racetrack.
Oof.
So Deirdre takes the post away. And the next time the race was scheduled, it's a beautiful sunny day.
Wow. Okay.
So Deirdre takes a post and she doesn't know what to do with it. She doesn't want to throw it away.
Yeah, that seems like it'd history. Be. Yeah, well, and also because it appears to have some sort of.
Yeah, you know, it's probably the ghost will not like that. Certainly, yeah.
If it didn't like being involved in a horse race, I don't think it's going to like being thrown into a dumpster, one bit.
So she doesn't know what to do. So she takes it. She stores it in her garage for now.
Okay.
So which it feels like theft, quite honestly. She's a stealing bit. From the city. I think a little bit here.
Plus, if it's going to rain every day in your garage, that's going to be really difficult to like get the car in.
A few months later, Deirdre receives an excess water bill for $500,000 of water.
That's a lot.
That had leaked out from pipes beneath her garage. So then Deirdre decides that she doesn't want the post.
Yeah.
anymore because there's this water thing going on. Mm. So she donates it to the city. The city stores it at the library. Now, this is a terrible idea because libraries are full of books, which famously do not do well with water.
Yeah. Maybe you store it near like a dam or.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe like somewhere where you've had a drought.
Yeah. Like in a farmer's field. Yeah. Or maybe if you're really thirsty, you just lay it down and you lay on your back and you open your mouth.
hold it onto your head and just go. No, so she takes it to the library. This is where they store it. And the library immediately begins to suffer plumbing problems.
Oh.
Wait a minute. Eh.
There we go. You know what? You know what would be really convenient for labeling those buttons, Clayton?
What's that? I did label them. Here's I did label them, but I didn't prepare them.
Okay.
Second bank. So you gotta scroll through, and I forgot to scroll through.
Mm, okay.
Do you want to take it from the top?
You can just get more buttons if you wanted.
There's lots. Well, no, you can't put more buttons on here. Mm-hmm. There's only 8 buttons, but you can use each button 3 times.
Okay.
But you gotta scroll through.
What are you doing for the top? Okay, fine.
Okay, thanks.
You can just have Jeremy put that in, you know.
I know. Just really excited I got access to my soundboard back. Anyway, so let's see. None of the townspeople are surprised, of course. Everyone knows that you shouldn't mess with Fisher's ghost.
Mm-hmm. And this is just a wooden pole, right?
I wouldn't say it's just.
Well, okay, yeah. I mean, in appearance, maybe in material, it is nothing more than a wooden post.
Yeah, yeah. It's part of a bridge.
Right. So far, they have removed it and taken it to a garage instead of taking it back to where it was found. Mm-hmm. Now they've taken it to a library instead of, again, second option. Yeah. You know, would be to take it back to where it was found. And I'm very curious what the next plan is going to be here, because it better be throwing it back where the fuck they found it.
I mean, if you have a thing that's like a haunted totem that is cursed, that is the only thing to do with it. You put it back.
Right.
Yeah. That's all at once. That's all at once. This, to go back.
This is not some doll that's going to show back up in your kid's room the next day after you've thrown it in the incinerator.
Well, to be fair, we don't know that. Aren't you the log I burned last night? Oh, my God.
Daddy, the log in my room is back.
That's probably a different log. Go back to bed.
It has the same eyes.
Oh, man. All right. So Frederick George James Fisher was born on August 28th, 1792 in ye olde London, England. Now, we don't know a whole lot about his early life, but by the time he got to his early 20s, we do know that he was a shopkeeper. And we know that he was unmarried. Word on the street is he was also the father of two children in town.
Okay.
Bit of a scoundrel. Life is going okay for Fisher until he's caught funneling forged banknotes through his business.
Oh, I think we're getting sent to Australia, not on a vacation, are we?
No, spoiler alert.
We're getting a one-way ticket to Australia, aren't we?
We'll see what happens. I do want to first talk about the fact that forgery must have been so fucking easy.
Oh, absolutely. Then. Yeah.
I mean, every bill had to be fake. Just like, yeah, I found a piece of paper and I wrote on it worth 20. And they took it. Anyway, so he got caught doing that. So they consider this a pretty serious crime because Fisher was sentenced to 14 years in prison.
With
possibility of death penalty.
Oh, so I like how nowadays it's like, oh, you know, 14 years in prison, you know, possibility of parole, maybe you'll survive. And back then it was 14 years in prison. Things don't go right. You may just be killed in there too. You know,
we'll see what happens. You better be on good behavior, friend.
Good behavior is a 14 number. Bad behavior goes the other way.
So they do indeed send him to the biggest prison they had, Australia.
Oh, glorious. Just glorious.
Fun fact.
Wham!
Transportation of criminals, is what it was called, transportation, was an alternative to the death penalty. So it's like you could be put to death for passing forged notes, or you can go spend 14 years in Australia.
Okay.
Now, initially, Britain sent all its prisoners to America.
Right.
Which I did not know. makes a lot of sense. But after the Revolutionary War, Americans were like, no, we don't. We no longer accept this.
No. Shot on sight, I'm afraid.
Go away. So in 1786, they start sending them to Australia, where they would spend their time building new colonies, which is a pretty good plan, really. You want new colonies? Send the criminals. They could go do it.
Mm-hmm. It is hilarious to me that they had done this for many years in America, and then America famously, I think, had enough of it and stepped away. And now they're like, oh, what's the other solution? What's a further away place than America? Same concept, just further away.
And also, like, fewer resources on the continent for them to, like, muster arms against us.
Right, yeah.
I think I have an idea.
Where is in America we give less of a shit about? Oh, I know. Crikey.
So, if you were convicted of a capital crime, you spent 14 years there. If it was a lesser crime, then you only had to spend 7 years, which feels like a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah, but you still had to, like, convince somebody that it was your turn to get back on the boat to go back to England after the 7 years, you know?
Yeah, I don't know what their record-keeping was like.
It seems complicated. I don't think you go down there and then sit in a jail cell. It's pretty much just you go down there and you work on a farm and...
Yeah, you're supposed to be building towns.
Yeah, yeah.
Your whole thing.
Maybe you get killed by a kangaroo. Maybe you get eaten by a spider the size of a car. I don't know. After 7 years, try to see if you can find the boat again.
Actually, can I just get the death penalty?
Yeah,
that sounds great.
You know.
Please. So this is Fred Fisher's fate. So he's sentenced on July 26, 1815, and he's loaded on a boat bound for Australia. Now, he actually takes to it all pretty well. He keeps his head down. So he's out of trouble. So after 7 years, he's pretty much been on good behavior. He applies for a ticket of leave and permission to purchase property. Now, a ticket of leave does not mean you can leave.
Right.
That's what I learned. So it means that you could start building an actual life.
In Australia.
In Australia, yeah.
So
you can, like, leave.
Okay.
You can leave the confines of whatever sort of colony prison you're in.
Mm, yeah.
But you may not leave Australia. No, thank you. So his request is granted. Mm-hmm. And he buys a farm in Campbelltown. Now, Campbelltown is southwest of Sydney just a little bit. And he starts to build himself a life. He builds a house. Probably get some kangaroos or something. Whatever they do.
I'm sure.
Whatever
yeah.
they heard. They heard kangaroos.
Kangaroos. They probably grows pineapples or something. I don't know what they do down there.
They probably grow. Pineapples. I think they grow dirt. Mm-hmm. They have lots of dirt farms in Australia. Let's see. In 1825, Fisher gets into an argument with a local carpenter named William Brooker. The argument was over money. I think Brooker had done some work for Fisher, mm-hmm. and they had a difference of opinion about whether or not Brooker had been fairly paid. And so the argument ended the same way I imagine every Australian argument is ended. Mm-hmm. Fisher pulls a knife, and he stabs Brooker.
Oh, my God. I can only imagine which prison colony he gets sent to now. Oh, you thought Australia was very welcoming. Well, guess what we got for you now? It's called Rhode Island.
Oh, no! Oh, man. And we've all seen Crocodile Dundee. We know what those knives are like. Yep. Those are big knives. So he stabs Brooker. This does end the argument. Brooker has no more. He's not putting up a fight anymore.
There's a new argument about removing the knife.
Brooker was actually fine.
I'm sure he was. Right, yeah.
Yeah. But local law enforcement was like, you can't just stab people. We can't let that happen.
We have like three rules down here.
And that is, I mean, it's not actually technically one of them, but come on. Most of us can stab people, but you are here as a prison sentence. Mm-hmm. You can't stab people. So they sent him to jail for a few weeks just to like show everyone that like, hey, everyone.
A few weeks.
Yeah, it's not very long. He stabs one, but he didn't kill him. He's fine.
Right. Yeah. This is like the black hole scene from Interstellar. Like 3 weeks in Australia is like 3 years serving prison time anywhere else in the world. So it's.
Yeah.
It's
the spiders in that jail cell were horrific. Felt a lot longer. So let's see. So Fisher is like, well, I can do that time. No problem. But he's worried about his property.
Mm.
Because everyone in Australia is a criminal.
Right.
And so he sends word to his neighbor. Now, his neighbor is a man named William George Worrell. No relation to Ernest P.
Right.
I think, yeah. Now, Worrell, he must have done some Australian work at some point, Ernest. Old Ernest.
Sure, that was when he was just kind of circling the drain there. He's like, you know what? I have to go earn money somewhere.
Ernest down under. Mm. Worrell was, quote, known to be an honest and industrious man. So you can trust him. So Worrell comes to the jail to see Fisher, and Fisher gives him power of attorney.
Oh. Over
all of his everything.
Okay. A lot of available paperwork down here. This is surprising to me.
Well, I think at this point you just had to turn around three times and spit over your shoulder and then say power of attorney. Then you slap him in the face and it's done.
And that will cost you three spiders. Okay. And here they are. And
I got those in my pocket right here. I got that
on me. It's not a big deal.
Dig one of them out of my veins, which is currently burrowing, but give me a second here and I'll get it right over to you. So he gives him power of attorney just in case like any drastic action needs to happen while he's away because he really does not trust anybody. Mm-hmm. And this is all fine.
Sure.
No problem.
I don't see a problem here.
So Fisher serves his short jail sentence and he returns to his farm. And everything's good.
Mm, cool.
Don't try to steal anything. Everything's great. The next year, on June 17th, 1826, Fred Fisher disappears.
Ooh.
So it's a few days before people really get concerned because this is Australia. And people just wander off all the time. But after almost a week, people in town are like, hey, where's Fred?
Yeah.
He hasn't seen Fred for a while. Fred okay?
I thought he was on a walkabout, and then I checked. No more Fred. I don't see Fred here anymore.
You want to see any big fat dingoes lately?
I check.
Any overstuffed dingoes?
I check with the Spider King. He had nothing to say. So.
So they're looking for Fisher. So they ask Worrell if he knows what happened. And Worrell's like, yeah, he's not missing. He went back to England.
Oh, right. Yeah. Very convenient.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very convenient.
P.S. Here's this letter that he signed. He didn't date it, but I think we can all agree.
He also didn't sign it, actually. Yeah. But his name is printed there. I think you get it. And so Worrell says he went back to England because someone back in England had made a forgery accusation against Fisher back in England, and he sailed back there to defend his good name. Now, there's a few holes in this story. Yeah.
A couple big question marks floating around here.
First of all, I don't think Fisher can leave Australia still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a big one.
Is he still mid-sentence, right?
He's mid-sentence. This is 1826. He got there in 1815, I think.
Yeah, so he's still got a couple more years.
So he's got some time. I mean, he's got a ticket to leave, but he can't leave with it.
Right.
So he's got a few more years left, so he can't go. Secondly, he's been in Australia now for, like, it's over a decade.
Yeah. He owns land.
Yeah, I don't think anyone there in England is like, you know who I'm going to pass this off on?
Yeah.
This guy who hasn't been here for 12 years. Yeah, and he's got a whole life. Why? Who cares? Mm-hmm. Who cares about England? Yeah. So, anyway, so it's all suspicious, but Worrell's like, he's like, I don't know. It's what he said. I take him at his word. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Whatever. He's gone. 3 weeks later, Worrell sells Fisher's horse and all of his personal belongings.
Mm.
And the townspeople are like, hey, wait a minute.
Number one, this is a good deal on a horse. I don't want a discount.
And I thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I had to go to the bank and get a couple extra spiders, but I'm pretty sure we can figure something out here. So.
This is a good horse. This is a Man from Snowy River level horse. So I appreciate it. Thank you. But number two, they're like, he's coming back, right? Like, he's not going to live there now, and just, you can't just sell his stuff.
Right, yeah.
But Worrell said Fisher had sold him everything before he set sail, so it's okay. He's just selling stuff that belongs to him now, which makes a lot of sense.
Typical garage sale rules. You know, you haggle a little bit.
Yeah.
Pay 15, 16 spiders for the horse, and you're on your way.
It's great. And now I want to see Man from Snowy River. You ever seen that movie?
Return to Snowy River? No.
Oh, man. These are old Disney non-cartoons.
Oh.
Disney movies take place in Australia about a kind of a misunderstood rapscallion with a heart of gold who rides this great horse, and there's like these dramatic scenes where this horse goes like rides down a very steep mountain very fast, and he does like a whole thing. It's a Man from Snowy River. Do recommend.
Interesting.
Yeah. He loves a woman named Jessica.
Ah.
Jessica.
Only classic film from that era I think would be relevant for me would be good old Quigley. The
Apple Dumpling Game?
Quigley. Oh. Quigley.
Much more Quigley down. I don't think I've ever actually seen Quigley.
Oh, my goodness.
Love me some Tom Selleck, though.
Buddy.
Gotta check it out.
I was really excited whenever his mustache won Best Supporting Actor that year.
How do you grow a mustache like that?
I really don't know. I think it's just like blessed upon you. You know?
I think you come out of the womb. You've got this glorious mustache. It's like, all right, that's you. That's you, bud. Oh, gosh. Anyway, so Worrell says, yeah, Fisher sold him everything before he set sail. So it's okay. Plus, need I remind you, Fisher has power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So he can do whatever he wants with this property.
No expiration date on that thing.
They did not write that into the contract. So legally, he's totally in the clear to do this.
Sure.
There's no actual issue. Mm-hmm. And everything's fine.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why everybody's complaining so loudly about this.
It's so weird.
We got cheap horses. We got cheap, you know, whatever the hell else you have in Australia.
Yeah, but now he's starting an inflation on spiders. he's hoarding all the spiders now. So it's a real problem. a couple of weeks after Worrell sells the horse, then he tells everyone that Fisher sent him a letter from England.
Oh.
Saying, there's a letter.
Mm.
You received it. And the letter says that Worrell can have Fisher's farm.
How quick does mail travel in these days exactly? Because
they probably sent it from the boat.
They're on, they're probably
put sent it in a bottle and hauled it over, and it was a good current.
I noticed there was a boat going the other direction, so we flagged them down, and I told them, "Hey, can you tell Mr. Worrell in Campbelltown that he can just have everything. Signed me.
Signed me. Mm-hmm. So people are so suspicious about this. And they're like, what is going on? But Worrell has a letter from Fisher, or at least a letter that certainly looks like it's from Fisher.
Right, yeah.
So they're like, I don't know, maybe this is legit. Like, this is so weird, but I don't know what to do.
Yeah, and I mean, what's the likelihood of that being forged? After him getting sent there for forgery.
Yeah, there's no way.
Leaving
there's
to defend forgery. And now this letter shows up. This totally legitimate letter shows up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't mess with forgery. This is someone who clearly respects the sanctity of non-forged documents and banknotes. Oh, boy. So let's see how this turns out. In October, 4 months after Fisher's disappearance, a local man named John Farley runs into a local tavern. Farley is a well-respected man. He's got a good head on his shoulders. People really respect, you know, his whole deal. Got a good head, but he's in an absolute panic. And he tells everyone in the bar that he has just seen the ghost of Fred Fisher.
Oh, no. But Fred Fisher's not dead.
No, it was actually Fred Fisher.
He's just in England.
I was in England visiting some family, and I saw the ghost of Fred Fisher. Really freaked me out.
He really let himself go. That's very sad. Anyway.
So he saw the ghost of Fred Fisher. He said that Fisher's ghost was sitting on the rail of a nearby bridge.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to put a pin just for a second here and just remind you that when they dug up a rail from the bridge, that's got ghost butt energy on it.
Oh, which is like very concentrated.
Yes, that's where all his tattoos were.
As we've said, that's where you should look at all your ghost energy, right in the buttocks.
Right in the butt, just in case, because you never know. Anyway, so he sees him sitting on the rail of the nearby bridge. Here's a quote. Farley related that the ghost had not spoken, but had merely pointed to a paddock beyond the creek before disappearing. People aren't really sure what to make of Farley's story.
Right.
They, you know, again, he's very well respected, but they're like, I don't know. I don't think there's a ghost hanging out around here.
It's also really late at night. I don't want to go.
This is, you know, it's so warm in here. It's like fire in the fireplace. I've got three grogs in hand. Yeah. I don't know.
It's like 8:30 and the Spider King's pretty clear about us not going out this late. So
there is a curfew enforced to keep us all safe from the Spider King. Oh, man. He's really upset that Worrell has all his wards. So they're not really sure. But a few days later, on October 25th, two boys are using Fisher's farm as a shortcut when they notice bloodstains on the fence. They take a closer look, and they also find a lock of hair and a human tooth.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's a field tooth. Mm-hmm. So now the police are like, okay, we should go look into this, I guess. So they go search the field, which is the same field the ghost had pointed at, Farley. But they didn't find anything.
Okay.
Other than the lock of hair and,
and
the human tooth. They don't find anything, but they're like, I don't know, this whole thing is so weird. Like, Worrell's been acting weird, and this guy saw a ghost who we trust, and these kids found pieces of body. Like, something's not adding up. So they call in an Aboriginal tracker.
Ah, okay. Sure. This is above my pay grade.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm 2 days away from retirement. Come on, man. So they call in an Aboriginal. Now, it's one interesting note here is they called in an Aboriginal tracker from England. I assume there are other nearby options for this sort of work. It may also be that the locals will tell them to go fuck off
because
we don't like what you've done to us here.
I really don't like what you've done with the place, just being perfectly honest. It was a lot better before you decided to literally dump all of the worst people you can imagine on our island.
The spiders didn't used to have a king. Let's just say that. So they call in this Aboriginal tracker from England. So it takes a while to get there, for him to get there.
He doesn't get lost, does he? Because that'd be pretty bad.
God, wouldn't that be? The tracker does his thing, and he spends some time in the field. One of the things he does is he tests the water that's in the puddles.
Oh.
And he says, and this is a quote, "White fellow's fat here."
Okay.
You know that thing where you're like, you're tasting water in puddles?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this one's definitely got some white man fat.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a very thorough tracker.
I guess if you taste a lot of different fats, maybe you can identify more easily. I don't know. But let's get back. Yeah, I mean, but you're still drinking out of a puddle. I mean, no matter what happens.
Yeah, I don't know what's worse. You're drinking out of a puddle or the fact that you can identify the taste of white man fat. So the search then intensifies. They bring people back in. They search more. They eventually uncover the remains of Fred Fisher buried in a shallow grave by the side of the creek.
Oh.
Right at the edge of George Worrell's land. So Worrell's arrested.
Uh-huh.
And he immediately confesses to the murder.
Oh, dude. Come on. You have all the paperwork. Come on.
You've got power of attorney. Yeah. I think that actually gives you the legal right to kill someone.
Yeah.
Right? I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly pull the plug.
Back in these days, when there's like literally no such thing as forensic evidence, why don't you just deny everything? Like, I know this looks really bad.
Not.
But,
this is all, hey, folks, this is circumstantial. Yeah. Sorry. I don't know what to tell you.
Really, no video at all. Interesting, huh? And no fingerprints.
No DNA, huh? I didn't find any DNA on the scene?
Really weird. Yeah. Yeah.
Hope you find your man, though.
Yeah. It's very odd. You know, let's go back to writing some more letters.
So he is sentenced to hang on February 5th, 1827. Because I guess if you're in Australia already, you can't have the option of going to Australia instead of the death penalty. So he chooses death over Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. He's sentenced to hang on February 5th, 1827. And when they ask him if he has any last words, he says that he had murdered Fisher by mistake. Quote, thinking him a horse in the wheat crop.
That he intended to murder. I don't. I mean,
the townspeople have some issues with this claim. Now, I don't know anything about Australian horses other than what I have learned from Man from Snowy River, which again is it's a glorious specimen. Maybe they are
a nuisance.
Bad.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've learned a lot about emus recently, and the emu war in Australia is an episode that Ryan and I did for the Ghost Plus. they were bad. There were no horses mentioned though in that story. So
yeah, I mean this sounds like it's probably covering for the Spider King after it's all said and done. This is I can't let this reach him. Yeah, like anything else. I thought it was murdering a horse in the wheat. Horses, famously
invasive species,
famously taller than wheat, very easy to identify in wheat.
It could be tall wheat,
or could be a pony,
could be a small horse, could be a pony, could be a small horse, small horse, tall wheat. You know, so the only thing you can do when you find a horse in your wheat crop is to murder the horse.
Shoot first, and let God sort it out. I really don't know what's wrong here, guys.
I will also remind you that they found a lock of hair and a tooth. So this was a close range bludgeoning.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The body had been, quote, badly battered. So, you know that thing when you're on your field, you see a horse and so you get a shillelagh and you just beat the shit out of it until it's dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he's doing.
Yeah.
And when you see it's a person up close and you're like, I don't know, maybe what if you're wearing a clever disguise horse?
What if it's actually two horses and one's in the front of the man costume and one's in the back of the man costume? I don't know. You know?
Hey, I'm a student of irony. Mm-hmm. That could be true. So that's, they didn't believe that. They thought probably Worrell just wanted all Fisher's stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Occam's razor. That's sure. Fair. That's fair. That's fair.
Oh man. So since then, there have been quite a few sightings of Fred Fisher's ghost. Now, we've already talked about the cursed piece of bridge where the ghost had sat. There is now a theater called the Town Hall Theater that exists on what used to be Fisher's property, and the ghost of Fred Fisher is often seen there. There are flickering lights. There are eerie footsteps. And sometimes the misty figure of Fisher will walk on stage during rehearsal.
Oh, wow.
Which is kind of be distracting, but the show must go on.
Probably fascinated by what's going on here. Like, what the fuck is all this?
Hair up. Put your clothes on. What is happening here? This is not okay. One night during rehearsal, the lights went out in the orchestra pit, even though no one was anywhere near the light switch. And the music director shouted, "For God's sake, Fred, turn the lights back on." And the lights immediately turned back on.
Somewhat obedient. I like that.
Yes. Yeah. So one Campbelltown resident named Beatrice Charters says when she first moved to their house there in the 60s, the house is near the creek, they could hear her 3-year-old granddaughter talking to someone in the attic. When they walked in, there was no one there but the child, and they asked who she was talking to, and she said, "Uncle Fred."
Ooh.
Now, they do not have an Uncle Fred in the family. So that was concerning. Fisher's ghost is a whole thing in Campbelltown. I mean, a whole thing. So the creek where the body was found is now called Fisher's Ghost Creek.
Oh.
So it's not just Fisher's Creek.
Straight to it. Yeah.
Fisher's Ghost Creek. There's a restaurant in town called Fisher's Ghost Restaurant.
I love Australia. I love it. Just like straight to it.
Go all the way in. All the way in. The manager of Fisher's Ghost Restaurant can't explain why paintings on the walls will mysteriously switch places at night. And nor can he explain how one morning he arrived to open the restaurant to find all the fireplaces fully ablaze, though they had been checked and extinguished the night before. To appease the ghost of Fred Fisher, just as a general course of life, the town hosts an annual festival in his honor. They have the Fisher's Ghost Festival. It takes place every November.
Mm-hmm.
How long do you think this festival lasts?
Oh, gosh. I mean, November is the weather's very nice down there in November, right? Because we're on the other side.
I think so, yeah.
So I'm going to say it lasts for 2 weeks.
Close. 10 days.
Oh,
10 days of celebrating Fisher's Ghost. Goodness every gracious. November.
Oof.
10-day festival.
Wow.
So they really embrace it. They go for it. They're all in. And that's the story of Fred Fisher's ghost in Australia. Not bad, right?
Oh, man. It'd be a fun festival to go to.
I know. They're, you should check out the website. It looks really great. Lots of games.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of good-looking food. And it's all death-themed. So it's kind of like,
I mean,
kinda like Dia de los Muertos, but, you know, very white. And about one specific ghost.
I'm struggling to think of any Australian festival that isn't probably somewhat death-themed. I mean, it's a pretty harsh place.
That's true. Yeah. Why would we celebrate life? Mm. No one survives here. but I do want you to see the logo on the website for this festival, because it's it looks like something I would make, quite frankly. Let's see here.
It's to the point. I love it. It is just in simple I don't know, some sort of block font. Festival of Fisher's Ghost, with ghost replaced by a pretty familiar looking.
There's a lot about this whole thing that is very similar to our logo, actually. Yeah. So the ghost drawing is the O in ghost, as it is on our logo.
Mm-hmm.
Block text, which we also have. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I feel seen, quite frankly.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's very Dia de los Muertos. But except, look at this guy.
I'm not sure what that
is. I don't know who that is.
That is the Baltimore Orioles mascot. I'm not entirely sure how he got down there. Why he's down there.
He has committed some heinous crimes. And he is paying dearly for those.
I'm on year 11. I'm really kind of wishing I'd just chosen death at this point. But maybe I'll get home at some point.
And these are all pirates in skeleton face paint.
Lovely. Good for them.
So, seems fun. Seems fun. There's a poem, Legend of Fisher's Ghost, by an unknown author. Do we want to read it?
You know, I'm real busy.
Oh, man. That's it. And so, if we ever get to Australia, I think we were, for a while, we were growing in Australia, our listenership, but that stopped over the last year or so. I once had high hopes of someday touring Australia to do a big Australia live show tour. But I don't know. Those hopes are on the back burner. But we do have some Australian listeners. So, hey, if y'all are listening, g'day. G'day to you. And tell everyone you know, because I would love someone else to pay for me to come down to go to this festival for a while. Seems great. We could do a live show during the festival.
Absolutely.
That sounds very fun. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, that is this week's episode of Is This a Ghost? We are a production of Smith Show Media. All the notes this week were actually taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes from Patrick Dean. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our social media editor, manager, and director, and chieftain is Kai Valonis. And if you dig up some old stuff that's haunted, you got to put it back. You got to put it back. Because if you don't, it might be you that we talk about next week on Is This a Ghost?